Now, we're going to be talking about the fascinating subject of medical marijuana. Across the world, laws are changing. Medical cannabis is now available in Canada, Israel and Uruguay, 23 states of the USA. Medical doctors and healthcare professionals are stymied by miraculous cures which are occurring to people all around the world suffering from even deadly forms of lung cancer. John Lycett Green is the founder of Medical Marijuana UK, and he joins us now. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Philip. How are you doing in Spain?
It's Bill, actually, but to you, we're close. That's actually, I've never had that one before. It's a first. Before we talk about the marijuana thing, you tell me that you're the grandson of Sir John Betjeman.
Yes, that is the correct information.
Magnificent. Wow. What a lovely honour to have.
It's a great honour to have, a lot to live up to, but in his life, he did a lot of campaigning aside from poetry. You know, he was a great campaigner for saving buildings, saving architecture, of course. And so I hope I'm really just trying to continue maybe in a similar sort of vein. And if I have half the life he has, I'd be very proud of myself.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. So, John, Medical Marijuana UK, what is it? Why was it started?
Medicalmarijuana.co.uk is basically an information website. In November 2013, my own mother, Candida, John's daughter, was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And I'm sure, as people might know, pancreatic cancer is fairly high up there, up there with brain cancer in terms of it's the highest fatality rates. And I, you know, instantly started looking around at anything I could do to help my mother on top of whatever conventional treatment she was, you know, being offered at the time.
Yes.
And what came up again and again and again was cannabis, you know. And I, the first person I spoke to had shrunk metastatic brain tumours. And, you know, and she just, I sort of immediately looked into it and then started to see more and more research was actually out there. You know, more clinical papers had been done, say, since 1974. In the 80s, and the more and more I looked into it, the more and more I kind of thought about, trying it out and suggesting it to my mum. And at first, I did that, and, you know, she had experience of cannabis in the 60s, but, you know, it was not something she wanted to return to. But then, you know, by January 2014, you know, she was in such pain, and she was sort of spread that she couldn't really walk from the bedroom to the kitchen without being in severe agony, you know. So at this point, she said, go on, why don't we just give it a whirl?
Sure.
At this point, I had managed to acquire some canna butter, which is just made from raw cannabis and coconut oil, and we started putting that in her food, and almost instantaneously, she started having, it had instantaneous effects, you know.
Really?
And she was able to sleep more. She slept about 12 hours. Her appetite came back, you know, and she rode her horse about a week after.
Good Lord.
And that, you know, I didn't really know about cannabis oil or even half about what medical marijuana was, or just, you know, I just kind of got news snippets. So I knew that this sort of thing worked, you know, and I mean, I know for my mother was predicted probably about 3 to 6 months to live in November 2013, and I didn't get her, you know, I didn't have the sort of same cannabis oil as people have, you know about, or a lot of people are using and have had these miraculous stories with, but I had some, you know, and just the suffering that it relieved for her was incredible, you know. And like I say, the main things that it works with is sleep, appetite, and removing nausea. You know, the first thing I found out that there was a synthetic cannabinoid called nabiline that's been prescribed since 1991 for the treatment the side effects of chemotherapy. You know, so that was the first thing. You know, and she started doing chemo, and it helped with that as well. She wasn't sick the whole time. You know, there were some complications with the chemotherapy, and in the end, the cancer did succumb. You know, she succumbed to the cancer and the treatment, but she had, you know, an extra 18 months on from her initial diagnosis. She'd spent a wonderful holiday in Cornwall with us, you know, and she died pretty much peacefully and, you know, with not too much suffering at home. And that was greatly due to, you know, some of the medical marijuana that she was consuming. And so after that, I made a vow to get the information out there and start spreading this information and create a website that would have, you know, enough information for people to maybe go and make their own decision, you know, for their own treatment themselves. And I wouldn't ever say don't do chemotherapy or don't, you know, I'm certainly don't claim to be a doctor. But I just think, you know, at the moment there is, like you say, there's a revolution of medical marijuana going on around the world. You know, you didn't mention even Australia last week has announced that they will be trialing cannabis for severely epileptic children using cannabis which is high in CBD and low in THC. And, you know, in Iran, even last week, Croatia is legalized for cancer patients. And it's kind of happening around the world, apart from in England, you know. But that's kind of, I don't want to bang on too much. Any, what else would you like to ask me?
Well, what were the doctors, your mother's doctors, saying to you when you told them what you were doing?
My mother was diagnosed in, was treated in the LOC, which is the London Oncology Centre, which is fairly high up there in cancer treatment, especially. And they were initially dismissive, a little bit dismissive, and they said, well, hey, look, if it's good for the pain, it's good, you know, good for you thing, we can use it, you know, then they wouldn't advise against it, you know. And certainly as there's been no reported deaths for in the history of the use of cannabis, so it's hardly... You know, the risk factors are, you know, if one were to look into it, are only really psychological, you know.
It's always been a medicine. The Chinese used it, ancient Egyptians used it, the Assyrians used it, the Greeks used it, the Hindus used it. And so it's not a surprise that it has some effect.
It has some effect, you know. And it was, if you really look into the history of it, is the, you know, in 1920 in the USA... 20% of prescriptions from the U.S. pharmacopoeia were using hemp oil or cannabis oil.
Mm.
Not to say a conspiracy, but, you know, when the pharmaceutical industry came in and the petrochemical industry was threatened by the hemp industry, you know, in the 1930s, that was when, you know, they began the kind of war on drugs and particularly the war on marijuana, which was an uncontrollable crop that anybody can grow, grows anywhere, pretty much in all four continents of the world. There are different strains that will thrive in those environments, and it's unpatentable, you know. And that's maybe there's one of the issues why it was illegalized. But it's happening now, and people, you know, you have conservative governments, even liberal governments, like the new Prime Minister of Canada, who's, you know, said he's going to legalize cannabis, specifically medicinal. But, you know, the real issue is that people, you know, for me, is that people are being actually denied their human right to medicine, you know, because you've all these people which are diagnosed with cancer. In the UK alone, last year, there were 350,000 new cases of cancer, with half of those resulting in fatalities. And it's not saying this is the cure. It's saying this is a treatment for cancer, and you should certainly, one should look into it and do one's own research and really consider it, you know, because the particularly with cancer, there's a chemical process called apoptosis, which is cannabinoids in a cannabis plant. You have 85 cannabinoids in a cannabis plant. Mm-hmm. THC is one of them. CBD is another one.
Now, sorry to interrupt you. Can we just clear up what those are? So THC is the psychoactive bit of cannabis.
I can explain it very easily. So in a cannabis plant, there are 85, or now there are 100 since been discovered, individual chemical compounds called cannabinoids.
Yep.
Now, the ones people have probably heard of are THC, which is a psychoactive one, and CBD is the one that's been getting a lot of press recently. Now, most cannabis strains will have a lot of CBD and a lot of THC, and they'll have another 85 different ones, or 100, or the Philadelphia University just discovered another 20, that work in different ways with your body.
I see.
Now, in your body, there is something called an endocannabinoid system, and your body has, on the surface of every single cell in your body, you have cannabinoid receptors, and there's hundreds of clinical papers. If you were to type in any of those things into PubMed, you'd come up with sort of with bodies of evidence. And THC actually attacks mutated cells in your body.
Right.
And CBD attaches itself to all the surface of the cells in your central nervous system. So the medical marijuana stories, for example, of kids being, you know, having their seizures stopped with epileptic children in America, which has really pushed the legalization movement over there, that's to do with cannabis with high in CBD.
Yep.
And a lot of people will talk in England now about skunk or cannabis having too much THC. It's because CBD is actually an antipsychotic, you know, so
it balances it out.
It balances it out. So, for example, more traditional hashes, and you know, the recent Jon Snow documentary, they sort of pitted hash against skunk, and hash is higher in CBD, so it has more antipsychotic in, but the THC is still, you know, integral part of the whole plant having an effect and reacting within your body, you know. So at the moment you have cases of epilepsy, cancer, glaucoma, and all these diseases that were before thought to be completely unrelated, all being treated with some form of cannabis, you know.
What I'm fascinated by is that the body has its own, as you mentioned, endocannabinoid system. Nobody even knew that existed 20 years ago. And our bodies produce endocannabinoids similar to THC and CBD. Now, surely, in anybody's world, the discovery of that would have immediately ended the debate, wouldn't it?
Yes. Well, that's what I mean. But what you have, you know, if you have a look into it, it's a war of information, you know, and you have to look behind the tragedy. If you look behind it and go, well, most things, they have money behind them, you know, and the anti-cannabis legislation that came in, you know, was vaguely funded by pharmaceutical industry and the alcohol industry. Now, the alcohol industry in America funds most of the anti-cannabis campaigning over there because it is a competition, you know, to the alcohol, and it's also a competition to pharmaceuticals. And because people can... you know, it's been in no one's financial interest to promote this news. That's the way you have to look at it. Yeah.
Yes. You're not suggesting here that everybody wanders around smoking skunk, are you?
No, I'm not remotely suggesting that. And smoking cannabis is not really that medicinal. If you're using it for pain, then using it in a vape is the most sort of medicinal way to take it. But if you're taking it for a treatment of cancer or epilepsy, then you want to ingest the oil, and if you want to remove nearly 90% of the psychoactive effect, you take suppositories. And that's, you know, and then you're, you know, what you're doing is fueling your own endocannabinoid system. But the point is it's only been discovered 20 years ago, and we really are in the novel stages of discovery because of the laws around the world, is human trials have been pretty much impossible. Because, you know, the government in the UK and the government in America still lists cannabis as a Schedule 1 drug as having no therapeutic value. So a lot of research is stifled by that thing, you know. But, and it's also, we still don't know, you know, like I say, there's 85 different cannabinoids known about. We know that the two ones, you know, CBD and THC, work of our body. We don't even, you know, the very little is known, or you know, about the rest of them and how they're working or interacting with our bodies, you know.
There's been a lot of studies about this, haven't there? In fact, one of the studies was done by the University of Madrid here in Spain, a quite big study.
Professor Manuel Guzman, we actually featured a documentary called Project Storm, which is on YouTube. I would advise anyone watching. And Manuel Guzman is from 2002. He's been proving on glioma cells, which is brain cancer cells. Like I mentioned, that brain cancer is the most aggressive form of cancer. You know, so they've chosen those type of cancer cells, and you know, they've shown a reduction rate of 50%. You know, in mice, albeit mice because they can't be treated with humans, treated with THC and CBD.
Why is it, with the results that are available widely, is it that hundreds of millions of pounds in public funding is not being devoted to developing this? Is it simply because of the alcohol issue?
I wouldn't be able to say whether it's to do with the alcohol or the pharmaceutical industry. It's like I say, it's in no one's financial interest to promote, but it is a travesty that this is known about and our government knows about it, and presumably there are professionals and health professionals within our government bodies that know about the existence of the endocannabinoid system. And you know, there's so many stories now coming in from people, you know, from David Hibbert, for example, a guy from featured in the Daily Mail and stuff, who's a man from Stoke, you know, who's been sent home to die. He's got 18 months to live, and then he thought, okay, I'll try the cannabis oil, and he's then cleared his cancer. And it's not saying that everyone's going to do that, but... You know, why is that person having to go out and do that, or try and buy it online or make his own, when it's, the evidence is clearly there that this, you know, that we should A, look into it, and be devoting millions of pounds in research. You know, in Australia, the guys just donated 30 million quid to research epilepsy. You know, there's funding projects started around. In England, we have a pharmaceutical company, I don't know if you know this, called GW Pharma. that have currently 41 patents out, and they grow 10 tons of cannabis in the UK every year. They have a product called Sativex, which is S-A-T-I-V-X. That product is available on the NHS, but you have to pay for it £500. And they have a patent and a license is issued by the British government to make cannabis medicine.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah, that's something we want to look into as well. But yeah, that's www.gwpharma.com.
Tell us about cannabis oil. If I was to get hold of some cannabis oil and stick it on stick on a teaspoon, let's say, and just take a teaspoon of it, would I then go floating off around the room?
I think if you've never had experience with cannabis before, then you would have some psychoactive effects. But the point is, if you were to take it in a suppository format with hemp oil as a carrier, and it bypasses your liver, it won't be nearly as psychoactive,
right.
And that's what most people who have no use or, you know, who are trying to use the treatments or trying to get involved in that thing. Or if you use cannabis with a higher CBD content, then the high would be less.
Right. And where does one get cannabis oil then, if it's banned in the UK?
It's banned in the UK, and I would never ever advise against buying it online. There's lots and lots of scammers out there saying, "Oh, buy this," and because there's no testing facilities. There are a couple in Spain that can test places, but people aren't always advise, not buying online.
Well, I mean, with any drug, buying online is dicing with death, isn't it?
What we say to people in the UK, most people have the best success of growing their cannabis, on their own. Either doing that somewhere lawfully. In Spain, a lot of people are permitted to grow up to four plants at home. And the police are turning a blind eye. And then, it's a pretty easy process to make the cannabis oil yourself,
Yeah. So what are you? What would be your ideal scenario that tomorrow the government wrote on
my ambition, and I've been very clear about this from the beginning, is for every single house in the world to be growing CBD-rich cannabis with low psychoactive effects for medicinal purposes, lawfully and rightfully, and using that as a medicine that coordinates with their own endocannabinoid systems. And I will not stop until I've achieved that ambition.
And so just be clear again, for us here in Spain, give us the Spanish version again.
The Spanish version. My ambition is for everyone to, in the UK and around the world, to be lawfully growing CBD-rich cannabis at home and using it as a medicine.
No, sorry, what I meant was, you mentioned there that in Spain we already have a law that allows
it... In Spain there are currently 2,000 associations.
Right.
Now, those associations are like private members' clubs, and they have been around, they're part of Spanish law. Some of them are like cooking clubs where men used to go for...
Yes.
Private, and they're licensed to, they're adults, they're licensed to do what they like, sort of thing. And there are 2,000 associations within Spain. There's a great one in Alicante, and lots of those, within the areas of Spain that you should be able to get raw cannabis and should be able to get cannabis oil in. And many of them are providing cannabis oil. A lot of them are providing it for free to people that are really ill because it's quite easy to make. And that sort of thing. And the same thing is really going on in the UK. We've got there's these things called Cannabis Compassion Clubs, CCCs, running that are literally giving out free cannabis in the communities on a kind of on a French Resistance style.
Did you say that in Spain that you're allowed to grow four plants at home?
If you are associated with an association,
I see.
You need to contact your local association, and there are areas that are certainly more lenient, such as Navarra and Alicante.
Mm.
Other areas are a bit different, but I would say you do need to research that locally and find out where your local cannabis association is.
Fascinating. If people want to find out more about your organisation, give us your website address, John.
www.medicalmarijuana.co.uk.
Fantastic. Fascinating subject. Keep up the work, and would love to get you back on at some other point in the future to talk about it.
Thank you so much, mate.
All right, John. All the best.
Bye-bye.
TRE. Talk Radio Europe.